I'd like to call this meeting to order. Can I please have a moment of silence? Now can we please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Just as a reminder, please turn off all electronics or any device of any sort, cell phones of the sort, as they may interfere with the microphone system. Thank you. And now I'd like to ask for a roll call.
Charlie Hawkins.
Here.
Dennis Oleson.
Here.
Bonnie Onion.
Here.
Harry Robinson.
Here.
Ken Oplinger.
Here.
Clark Cotner.
Here.
Paul Greeno.
Here.
And now I'd like to take a minute to introduce the students from Blaine High School that are residing here tonight. My name is Tyler Kelly. I'm a senior at Blaine.
My name is Lily Linscott. I'm also a senior at Blaine.
My name is Haley Morrow, and I'm also a senior at Blaine.
My name is Danielle Rodenberger, and I'm a senior at Blaine.
My name is Toss Scanlon, and I'm a senior at Blaine.
My name is Shereen Rothliner, and I'm a senior at Blaine.
My name is Destiny Rodenberger, and I'm also a senior at Blaine.
My name is Jordan Rodenberger, and I'm also a senior at Blaine.
And in the crowd, we have Zach Rector, who is also a senior at Blaine, and our awesome teacher, Mr. Nix, who's seated in the back, giggling and whatnot. Oh. thank you for helping make this happen. And now I'd like to move on to recognize Joyce Vanderpool for the Blaine Builder Award. Is Joyce here? Can you please step forward? Thank you. Joyce and her husband moved to Blaine in 1973 when her husband retired from a career in the Navy, and where Joyce accepted a job as the administrative assistant to the port director for U.S. Customs. After retiring, she pursued a college education, receiving her Associate of Arts degree, and began a career in real estate, opening Vanderpool Realty in 1983, which has served the community for the last 29 years. Joyce believes in giving back to her community. She is literally a Blaine builder, as she has designed and constructed 8 spec homes, most of them in Blaine, and is beginning her 9th house soon. As she says, she is still in the building mood. Joyce is an avid tennis player and has played since high school. She continues to compete in tournaments around the country and internationally. She plays tennis at least 3 times a week, as well as attends a weekly clinic to stay on top of her game. She has been vice president of the Semiahmoo Tennis Club since it began 25 years ago, and is very active in planning and participating in the Skywater Tennis Tournament each June at Semiahmoo. Joyce says the Blaine Senior Center is one of her favorite places. She has been recently recognized for her generous contributions to the center, including the purchase of laptop computers, exercise equipment, and tables. She is also president of the Harbor View Condo Association. We are fortunate to have Joyce as a Blaine citizen and business owner. Her commitment to give back to the community generously with her time, energy, and financial contributions make her truly a Blaine builder. Congratulations, Joyce Vanderpool, with the Blaine Builder Award today November 26, 2004. Has anyone signed up for audience participation tonight? Will Mike Colhart please step forward?
Michael Coulthard. My address is 5468 Night Heron Drive, Blaine, Washington, 98230.
Will you go ahead and make your comments, please?
I beg your pardon?
Will you go ahead and make your comments, please?
Yes. I'm here to make a couple of comments about the fire station at on Semiahmoo Parkway. Specifically, I'm not sure how many people here are aware that that particular fire station was a requirement under the Semiahmoo Master Plan. The fire station was a requirement of the City of Blaine. The design of the fire station was basically done by a previous fire chief by the name of Mr. Franz. The fire hall was built under the supervision of the City of Blaine. But it was paid for by the Semiahmoo Company, which is the predecessor company to Trillium Corporation. So the fire station itself and the land was paid for by the developer of Semiahmoo to meet conditions under the Semiahmoo Master Plan. And the obvious concept behind it was that once you got to a critical size, like over 33 houses in the city or in the city limits, which is Semiahmoo West, that a fire station would be required. The fire station is extremely important to the people that live in Semiahmoo for two reasons. First of all, it enables us to obtain slightly lower insurance rates, which is always of interest. But more importantly, it is a perceived benefit of medical help in the case of a medical emergency. And as some of us are over 65, that becomes somewhat important. So the point of my comment is it's extremely important to the residents of Semiahmoo that that continue to be operated as a fire station. That fire station was donated to the city, given to the city in 1993. It is our understanding that it will continue under this transfer agreement to be a fire hall. But I would like to ask that if it ceases to be a fire hall, that obviously it immediately revert either back to the City of Blaine or back to the residents of Semiahmoo. Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else that would like to comment on any subject this evening? On to the next item on our agenda.
On to the next item on our agenda, written communications.
Barry, do we have any written communication?
We received an email dated November 21st from Joan Anderson regarding civil rights.
On to the next item, commission, committee, and board reports. First off, the Blaine Economic Development Advisory Committee with Clark Cotner.
No report.
The Northwest Economic Council with Ken Opplinger.
We have no report.
Also, Blaine Tourism Advisory Committee with Ken Oplinger.
We have sent the letters to the organizations that are not going to be receiving funding, and we have yet to set the final budget report.
Blaine Chamber of Commerce with Bonnie Onion.
There's no report.
The RAD Loan Committee with Bonnie Onion and Jeffrey Lazenby.
There is also no report.
The WTA Board with Paul Greeno.
There will be just one board meeting in December, December 13, 8 o'clock at the County Courthouse.
The Drayton Harbor Shellfish Advisory Committee with Charlie Hawkins. The Library Committee with also with Charlie Hawkins. The Senior Center Liaison with Dennis Olison.
No report.
The Planning Commission with Michael Jones.
On the December 13th meeting, there will be three public hearings about the Mineral Resource Land Zoning Text Amendment, which is notifications for properties near potential mining sites. Planned Residential Zoning District Amendment, make PUDs optional for development projects less than 5 acres, and the Conditional Use Permit for Auto Storage in the Central Business District, temporary auto storage for vehicles being exported to Canada. And for the Park and Cemetery Board, there's no report.
Okay. The Law and Justice Council with Mike Heslip.
There's been no meeting, so no reports.
Small Cities Caucus with Harry Robinson and Gary Tomczyk.
Met in Ferndale, and they toured the police station.
The Whatcom County, or the Whatcom Council of Governments, Harry Robinson, no report. The North Whatcom Fire Update with Chief Hollander. On to the next meeting on the agenda, or the item, city manager and staff reports.
Our first report will be for Public Works, Raven.
Good evening. I'm here to give project updates on like future ongoing completed projects. As for the H Street project, the lights are up and they will be on by the end of the week. However, there will be some paving that needs to be done still, but that won't be done until the start of next year. And for the next week, there will be holiday decorations being put up by the Public Works crew. And as for future projects, there's good news. We received funding from the TIB to fund the sidewalk in front of on H Street from the State Route 543 to 14th Street, as shown in the red up on the TV screen. And we also received funding for a sidewalk going from the entrance of the high school on Bobla Street to State Route 543. And also, the improvements to the public works yard have been completed, and I saw on my visit that the oil separation vault that was protecting Cane Creek from pollution, as the vault was intended to do, is working and is beneficial. And I'm here to introduce Raven and Matt Emlin from JCI and Stuart Simpson from Washington State Department of Enterprise Services for a presentation on energy performance contracting.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, and members of the future council, thank you very much for the opportunity to address you guys this evening. I'm particularly happy that we're addressing this topic when it's Youth in Government Day, as among the themes that you're going to be hearing about is reducing our environmental impact. And since you will be encountering the environment for much longer than the rest of us, this is very much a topic for you. What we hope to do this evening is introduce the concept of this performance contracting project, which is underway with the partners just mentioned, City of Blaine, Johnson Controls, and the State of Washington. And this is a type of project development, it's a project development strategy that's used by a lot of governmental jurisdictions when they're asking questions about how can we upgrade our infrastructure. How can we address aging infrastructure? How can we reduce our environmental impact and be more efficient in our operations? And most importantly, how do we pay for it all? So what you're going to hear is a new approach to addressing these kinds of needs. We're going to talk a little bit about some of the benefits, the potential kinds of improvements that we've been looking at as part of this process, and we'll look at some potential funding strategies and acquaint you with the schedule when we'll be returning to this group with more information. So next slide. I'd like to bring up Stuart Simpson from the State of Washington Department of Enterprise Services, who works specifically on a program with this type of performance contracting work.
Thank you, Matt. We've been doing performance contracting since about 1984 out of our office, formerly the Department of General Administration. We merged into a new agency called the Department of Enterprise Services. Performance contracting is actually an alternative public works process. You've heard of public works and having to take things out to bid and having open bid. This is a different process using energy service companies, like Matt was with Johnson Controls. They're one of our pre-selected energy service companies. So it's an RCW, a alternative public works RCW that allows us to do this. All the projects are run through our office. We have agreements with cities, school districts, state agencies, and then we work with the ESCO and have our contracts with them. And so it's sort of a three-part arrangement. Some of the projects that we can do are energy projects mostly, but we can also do water conservation projects. They also fall under the RCW. And some of the cities that we've worked with include City of Shelton, Aberdeen. I've got a project we're wrapping up with City of Bellingham, we also work with school districts, as I mentioned, small ones even down to Washtucna, if you know your Washington geography, very small school district. So, next slide.
One of the comments that problems we deal with often with customers, how do we find financing to make the improvements that we want to make? Or we find the situation of we know there's some things that make good financial sense for our organization, but they just don't fit in this year's capital budget. I want to illustrate how performance contracting addresses these by looking at the operational budget of the city. So if you look at the slide, and these are not your numbers, this is a generalized example. If you look at the orangish bar there, think about that as your operational budget, all of those utility bills that you're paying throughout the year, gas, water, electricity, so forth. Look at that amount. That's the amount that a city has to budget for on an annual basis. But then we try to develop a project where we look at a cash neutral approach to say, what if we could find projects that reduce that expected cost that you have so that your budget could actually be redirected from paying the utility bill every month toward paying debt to finance a project that delivers those energy and water savings. And so you would have a period where that money is allocated specifically to pay the debt, and then once the debt is paid off, then you are ahead of the game achieving some savings. So that's a basic formula of what we try to do with performance contracting, so that we put together a package of projects where we as an energy service company can guarantee you the level of savings that will be achieved with the project so that you know that you have the resources to pay for that. Next slide. So what are some of the kinds of things that we're actually talking about? It's the kinds of places where you're using resources throughout your building. It could be heating, ventilation, and air conditioning. So that could be as simple as newer equipment or right-sized equipment. It can also be controlling the amount of heating and air conditioning equipment. In a room like this, for instance, has very different needs right now when it's full than it would during the day. And we want to make sure in all kinds of situations like that, that you're using just the energy that's needed. We can look at things like lighting, moving to more efficient technologies. That's true both within buildings as well as exterior lighting or even street lighting, where there's some new LED technology that is coming online very quickly. We can look at process equipment. We have a wastewater engineer within our group at wastewater treatment situations or plants. So the range of measures, we can look at what might be real short-term paybacks, if you will, things where the energy savings are really great relative to the cost, some longer-term investments, and try to come up with a mix that meets that model of being a financeable package for the city. Next slide, please. So there are a number of ways that these can be funded. We'll be working with your staff to put together the right kind of package. Utility savings, we've just talked about. We are also targeting a grant from the Commerce Department that is specifically geared toward these types of projects. There's a maximum grant of $500,000, and that's sort of matched towards those who are trying to finance a project larger than that. But we feel that City of Blaine can be competitive, as there are some dollars earmarked for smaller cities. We've been in conversation with TIB regarding some programs that they're looking at. They're providing some technical assistance, looking at street lighting. We don't know whether there will be further funding down the road, but that's another piece to watch. And then certainly working with Bonneville Power Administration to see what sort of rebates could be available and incentives through that organization. Next slide. These projects are financed a number of different ways. There are organizations that just combine it with other city financing that goes on. Some of the finer print there is regarding a program, the local program run by the state treasury. It's a common source, particularly if smaller amounts are needed. It's a low-cost, fairly simple financing mechanism. There are other strategies. Municipal leases can be more flexible. We can certainly work through those options as well. City of Bellingham, just south of us, used something called qualified energy conservation bonds, and that is a program where some of the interest is subsidized by the federal government. So to qualify for that, you have to have savings of greater than 20% across the package buildings that you're looking at, but that could be a possibility. Next slide. So when we look at, so what are some of the benefits of this? What are some of the goals? How can this really provide value to the city? Raven wants to help address some of those questions for us.
To further kind of describe how this fits into our existing programs for sustainability and conservation, I just wanted to revisit this slide that was actually originally presented to you last summer, showing the City of Blaine and how we are starting to approach the next level of power rates through the Bonneville Power Administration. For our student council, with our power utility here in Blaine, we actually buy our power from Bonneville Power Association. They provide us with one rate that is pretty much up to the middle line there where the top of the purple squares are. From that point up to the next dotted line, we are kind of in the warning range, if you will, for the next rate level, which is called Tier 2, which is essentially once you hit that red line, everything in green then becomes a Tier 2 rate. What that means for our customers is higher costs for power because we would need to transfer those costs to our citizens. We would like to look at our facilities and see how we can be addressing potentially through this type of contracting, a way to reduce our power consumption as a city, to bring us back down out of that warning range, or at least to sustain us for a longer period of time in that range. One question that was asked of me is, Raven, you got to be crazy. Why would you want to essentially save money on your general fund for lighting and HVAC for the Banner Bank building at the disservice or cost to your power fund? That means less revenue for you, right? Well, yes, it means less revenue, but what it means is we avoid that Tier 2 rate. We have energy savings where we have departments that really need the savings and funds that really need the savings, like our wastewater funds needs the savings cost if we can get it with better use of power in our wastewater plant. And at the same time, be living up to those conservation goals that we have as a city. We did a presentation about a month ago on our power and water conservation programs. These are goals of the city, things that we're funding on an annual basis. This project ties into that. Looking at ways that Blaine as a city can be more sustainable. We've invested in millions of dollars into improvements to make our wastewater system the most sustainable it can be. We have goals to better promote efficiency and energy use, all of those things. Here's our opportunity to walk our talk in a way that would be affordable to the city. So with that, I'd ask for the next slide. So some of the things that this program can do besides just saving the energy is we can look at pieces of equipment that are part of our facilities that are aged, that might be nearing the end of their service life, and look at ways to finance improving those systems. This applies to pretty much all of our facilities, as you will see when Matt shows you the next slide. Another reason why we're kind of tackling this now in a time when budget dollars are at its all-time low, with news of the Semiahmoo hotel closure and such, is that there is this grant opportunity available through the state for up to $500,000. There's money specifically earmarked to small cities. We want to take advantage of that opportunity to leverage the cost of this program. And we also have some other things that we're doing within our program that would be able to be used towards MATCH that are already budgeted. The water metering program that we're doing is an already budgeted program that, if we wrap it into this, shows as a grant match. So there's a lot of great reasons for doing this now. I think that I will turn it back over to you, Matt. Thank you.
To ground you in how this whole process works and where we are today, we started with some feasibility. Our staff reviewed utility data that you provided, data about the buildings, and did some early walkthroughs to say, yeah, it looks like you may be a good candidate for this kind of work. With the investment grade audit, that's the next step, and that's what we're engaged with right now. Audit is a little bit of a perhaps a confusing term, because the product of this investment grade audit we're engaged in right now is coming back to the city with a proposal that we would be developing in conjunction with the state of Washington, a proposal for installation of a series of measures, and we as the energy service company would provide a guaranteed maximum price to install those, and we would guarantee a level of savings that would be associated with those measures. So that's the package that would come back to you as the city to review and see, you know, how does that fit with your goals. So if we can arrive on an appropriate, you know, package, that's what will go forward into a grant proposal. And then I'm assuming after you hear from that, you want to know about what can you afford based on what response you get from the grant, Department of Commerce on the grant. Then we can look at what the final funding plan would be for the project. And we'd work through some of those options that we looked at earlier to determine what's going to be the best fit for what you're trying to achieve. That audit and the subsequent contract is basis for installation. So we would act as a general contractor, if you will, installing the measures. And then it moves into what's called a performance period. And that's the performance part of performance contracting. And earlier when you looked at those savings numbers and you said, well, you know, that's what you're counting on to make sure that that you can invest in this, that's the piece that is critical for us to guarantee. So during this process of developing an audit, we're going to come up with a method for measuring what will the savings be. And that's a way that once the project is complete, we'll be able to measure what is the impact, come back to the year report and see, did this save what was guaranteed? And if not, then we as the energy service provider owe you, we would have to write you a check for any shortfall of the savings. So that helps, again, what we're trying to do simultaneously is build this financial case along with the technical case. So that helps lock it all together so that you know it's something that will make sense for you as a city. So next slide, please. So we've thrown a lot of information at you. I'm trying to provide an overview of the program. Be happy to answer questions.
Thank you. I do have a question, if I could, over here. Can't tell where it's coming from with the microphones. What is the estimated payback period of the loans?
It's up to you what the end result that you want to. Right now, what we have targeted, we definitely need things to pay within the average life of the equipment. So that's that provides the outer bound. And, you know, what we'll likely do is have a mix of measures, some that pay back in a shorter period of time, but also try to accommodate some of the capital pieces that you want to pull in.
Okay, but I need a number. I realize that you cannot give me a specific number, but are we talking about, say, 5 to 10 years or 10 to 30 years or some rough guess?
The way that our contract with the state reads is that it will have a payback period of 10 years or less unless requested by the city.
Thank you.
So there may be things that we might want to do that don't have the shorter payback at our request. We can include those in the project, but only at our request.
I think we may be going in slightly different directions. You're talking about a payback of the improvements. Are you such as when changing to a different electric meter would in fact pay for itself? I'm talking about paying back the bonds that we borrow. Are we both talking about the same thing, or are we talking about different things?
I think we're talking about the same thing.
Thank you.
Yeah. Right. Generally speaking, with these types of projects where I've seen and we've built solar into the package, is there tend to be other measures that have better financial performance that are helping pay the way. A lot of solar tends to be driven by incentives that are out there. And so, in short, that's not something that we've been reviewing as part of this package. And, you know, given the direction we've had to date, typically right now the incentive packages that are available in Washington State would be geared, they're best geared towards smaller solar installations of 10 kW or less. At the federal level, a lot of where you see people doing larger projects and really accessing the federal credits is where they're creating a third party to own a solar installation for a certain period of time in order to maximize the tax benefit and then turn it over to the end jurisdiction. So, well, we're seeing more of that. As a company, we're doing it, more of it in areas where the rates are higher, the electric rates.
Mm-hmm. You talked about structural things that you're going to be looking at when you saw the facilities. Is there also going to be sort of a programmatic look at specifically thinking about right now when it comes to development? You just sound like you had the program. A lot of people just get it when they repay a higher rate, they get power that is generated from alternative energy sources by demonstrating their preference.
Oh, we hadn't discussed that.
So a little bit out of scope for what they're doing because they're focusing on city-owned buildings and infrastructure, streetlights and water systems. As part of our BPA rebate program, there are some incentives for solar. They're kind of hard to get. They're, requires a certain amount of savings and payback. We have one person in particular that's really tried for it, and it hasn't penciled out. But we will continue to look at that. The programs that Bellingham is participating in with Puget Sound Energy are a little bit different because they have a different relationship with Puget Sound Energy, for one. And PSC, as a large, much larger utility than the city of Blaine as a power utility, has more resources to spread that out.
Let me just mention something, and maybe you are thinking of this. The state has an offering of up to 54 cents a kilowatt hour as a state incentive, and it comes through the utility. I'm not exactly sure how that works with your utility, but you would pay less tax to the state, basically use those monies to pay for the solar project. And I think you can get up to 10 years of payments based on your production. There's something called community solar, which is something that sort of what Matt was talking about, which is where the community itself can say, hey, I want to put up $1,000. I want to put up $5,000. And those people would get the benefits of the tax breaks and any other income that would come through these different incentives. And after 7 to 10 years, the public entity, if it's a city or a school district, would then own the solar panels for, say, a dollar. I mean, basically all the benefits are depleted out of the tax breaks. But the solar panels will last 40 years. So after 10 years, you've got 30 years worth of solar panels on your building. So there are some creative ways. I've heard that the community solar hasn't been able to take advantage of the federal tax breaks, so there's some problems with how that was structured because it's a state community solar program. But we're keeping an eye on it. Solar panel prices are coming down significantly, so we're looking for that sweet spot when we can get those into projects. So we're keeping an eye on that. The date for putting the grant applications in is the 15th of January, and they usually take a couple of weeks. They're pretty quick on turning it around, so you'll probably be notified by February 1st, I think. Is that, do you remember?
I thought the first round took longer than that.
Oh.
But
less than a month, so it's pretty quick turnaround, I think.
You mentioned the sewer plant as being a major consumer of electricity. Roughly how big is it? Is it a quarter of all the power that the city buys or 50%? Any rough idea?
I know we are the second largest power consumer of the city following Nature's Path.
following?
Nature's Path.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time. I know it was a slightly longer staff report, but we really wanted to take advantage of these guys being in town for you this evening.
And that'll be our staff report.
And now we would like to hear the report from Public Safety.
No report.
And now we would like to hear the report from Community Development Services.
No report.
And now we would like to hear the report from Finance.
All right. Here's the City of Blaine 2012. All right, here's the City of Blaine 2012 third quarter financial report. Both general fund revenue and expenditures are tracking at 75% through the third quarter of the year. The general fund balance is looking good, with the third quarter number meeting the target balance. Third quarter general fund revenue actuals are 75.9% of the total forecast, with most categories at or above their estimates. Looking at sales tax revenue, it is 73% of the forecast. Cumulatively, the third quarter 2012 is 4% higher than 2011 third quarter. July collections reported in September is 16% higher than in 2011 collections. This trend is beginning to mirror the country trend of reported higher sales tax revenues. Compared to previous years, the third quarter actual general fund revenue is up 5%. Most revenue categories are up compared to last year. A reason for the percentage change is collection of lease revenue from the new City Hall, for which we did budget. Turning to general fund expenditures, actual expenditures are 75.5% of the adopted appropriations. Compared to 2011, third quarter general fund expenditures are up 3.78%. In the electric fund, third quarter operating revenue is 78% of the forecasted estimates, and operating expenses are tracking at 61% of adopted appropriations. Revenue from the electric sales is about the same compared to third quarter of the previous year. For water, third quarter revenue is 72% of total forecasted. Total expenses are 66.7% of the budget. Water service revenue is about 2% lower compared to 2011. Wastewater operating revenue is 77% of the total estimate. Expenses are tracking 81% of the budget. The debt service payments are proportionally expected to be high in June and October this year. Stormwater revenue is 75.6% of the total estimate, and expenses are tracking at 60.6% of appropriations. Stormwater revenue is about 2% higher compared to the third quarter of 2011. And in an additional note, all of the utility fund balances are at or above their target balance. To go over some of the other revenue sources, actual utility taxes on electric, water, and sewer are 74% of estimated. Revenue from the real estate excise tax is 90% of the forecast and 25% higher compared to 2011. It will be interesting to see if this trend reflects a stronger real estate market or a few one-time high-dollar transactions. The one-cent gas tax is tracking 110% of the total forecast and 28% higher compared to third quarter 2011. The lodging tax is 69% of the total estimate and 2% below the third quarter 2011 number. 2012 third quarter expenditures of all funds are 64% of total appropriations. And that's the end of the slideshow. Thank you.
Any questions? And now we would like to hear the report of the city clerk.
No report.
And now we would like to hear the report of the city manager.
That's you.
I I would just like to remind you to look at the calendar. On December 3rd, we will have a council study session. And that ends our reports for today.
All right, we'll move on to the next item on the agenda, which is the public hearing.
Mayor, tonight we have our second public hearing on the 2013 city budget. Before public comment, the finance director will recap the important elements of the budget.
With the resort closure, the 2013 preliminary general fund budget faced a $535,000 shortfall, with forecasted decrease in revenues of 5%. Expenditures were forecasted to increase by 7% due to increases in fixed costs such as personal property insurance and fuel costs, among others.
In order to fill the gap and balance the budget, these cuts have been proposed in the general fund. So in terms of reductions, we're proposing for the senior center allocation to reduce it by $10,000, the Boys and Girls Club allocation by $5,000, to reduce the street transfer, the general fund transfers a certain amount of money each year for street maintenance, and the proposal is to reduce that by $65,000. Also proposing to eliminate a cost of living increase for employees, which was a 1.5% increase, equating to $30,000, and to reduce park maintenance by $10,000. Also reduce planning professional services by $5,000, the information technology programs by $20,000, and court services by $30,000. We're also proposing to leave vacant 2 police officer positions, and then also to lay off 3 general fund positions. And those notices were given a couple of weeks ago.
In terms of revenue increases, the budget anticipates the following. Take the full mill levy of 3%, which would generate an additional $27,000. This was enacted by council upon the close of the property tax public hearing at the last meeting. Increase the business license fee by $10 from $65 to $75, which should generate about another $9,000 in revenue. This was adopted by council at last meeting. Use $25,000 of the general fund balance. Increase land use fees, which potentially could generate an additional $20,000.
That was also adopted by the council.
In terms of utility funds, they are all impacted by the closure of the resort. The resort pays about $681,000 a year in city utilities alone. The full impact is yet to be determined, as it doesn't seem likely that utilities will be turned off completely for maintenance purposes. But staff is proposing some expenditure reductions. Namely, the projects that have been deferred are the building of the new public works storage building and a power generation feasibility study in the electric fund. Thank you.
Persons speaking on this issue will be allowed 3 minutes. An additional 2 minutes of non-repetitive testimony will be allowed after all testimonies have been heard. Action may be taken at the end of the public hearing. First off is the 2013 preliminary budget. Continued. Anyone wishing to speak to this issue, please step forward. And please state your name and address. Okay, next is the sale of... Are there any questions from the council? We're going to close the public hearing on the 2013 preliminary budget. And the next public hearing will be on the sale of surplus property of the Sunyama Fire Station. If anyone has anything to say, please step forward and state your address. Name and address.
Mayor, before receiving public comments, we would like to give an overview of the proposal. We have Chief Haslip, Chief Hollinger, and John Sitkin, our city attorney. They can explain what you are being asked to consider. I would suggest that Mike lead out with help from Chief Hollinger. Our city attorney can fill in the details of the agreement.
Very briefly, Your Honors, this issue is basically housekeeping to a large extent. The earlier speaker at the public hearing was exactly correct in that the fire station for Semiyama was originally constructed for providing fire protection to that area, which included the Semiyama development. And as the years have gone by and as Semiyama development has been built out, it has been serving its purpose. Originally, it was a facility constructed and operated by the Blaine Fire Department. Over time, through a series of improvements and enhancements, our fire protection has changed from the City of Blaine Fire Department to our current membership in North Whatcom Fire and Rescue, Fire District 21. We're still receiving exemplary service from North Whatcom Fire and Rescue, which maintains Semiyama Fire Station and will continue to do so. However, over time, that building has come in need of some repairs, and North Whatcom Fire and Rescue, which operates out of the building, is willing to engage in those repairs, but would prefer that they be making those repairs to their own station, which, as it works out, is also a good deal for the citizens of Blaine insofar as if they don't make those repairs, we're going to have to make them because we want it to continue as a fire station. So the recommendation with review by Mr. Sitkin, working in a capacity on both sides, and with the fire chiefs and with the city manager and myself, we would recommend that council consider transferring the ownership, allowing us to entertain passing a resolution to surplus the property, which would then allow the city manager to engage in the process of transferring ownership of the station to North Whatcom Fire and Rescue with the specific provision that it continue to be operated as an active fire station, and with a revisionary clause that if at some point in the future North Whatcom Fire and Rescue decides to not operate that facility in that capacity, that property would then and building would then revert back to the City of Blaine. So I'll perhaps if Mr. Sitkin has anything to add in that regard, but our intention on everybody's side is to not make any changes in the level of service, but to best provision the continued occupation and use of that facility and to better allow for the facility to be used as a fire station, properly maintained, properly insured, and to have those elements taken care of by North Whatcom as owner of the building. So, John, did you have anything to add, sir?
Mike did a great job. I just wanted a few points for you that you should be aware of. There's a two-step process here under the laws. First, you have to declare the property surplus, transfer to any entity. If you are allowed to transfer property to another government, the state auditor or the state law requires it to be for true and pure value. So what the transfer here is unique in that it isn't for a appraised fair market value in the sense that it's to the open market, because there would be a reversionary interest, as Mike explained, on the deed that would have two effects. One, a covenant essentially limiting the use of the property as a fire, active fire station, and that will be defined, and that by the district or its successor fire district. And should it cease to be done, used that way, it automatically would revert, the ownership of the property would automatically revert to the city. That's a substantial benefit to the city that the city would retain in the transfer, and why you can find that this transaction is a true fair value with these limitations. I want to just tell you that and make sure that kind of analysis and thought is on the record should this come up in the future with someone looking at this and why wasn't it appraised in the rest, because that reversionary interest is such a restriction on the property but retains such a benefit to the city that it is for true fair value of the property as restricted. Clark, I see you staring at me with questions, council members. So
me? I'm just trying to hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry. So
I read lips.
So in that regard, and you have the draft resolution before you, I just let you, I've made a couple minor changes in it that I'm sending to Sherry. One is in section two, where I refer to the successor of the district, I wrote in successor fire district. I want to make sure that the district could go through additional mergers or consolidations in the future, and the intention wasn't a successor of the owner of the property. The intention was that the successor fire district, so we don't get into an issue if it becomes District 25 or something in the future. The other one in the findings, I just, for that issue related to the benefit to the city and the citizens to retain its use as a fire, active fire station, I built up a little bit to Section 3 and what I just described to you to read. That'll ensure the continued use of the property as an active fire station will retain and confer a substantial benefit to the cities and citizens. The true, the fair value of the property is nominal. That way, it will be transferred for a nominal amount. Gary and Chief can work out the final paperwork. My role here is I have a Gary and the Chief for the district signed a conflict waiver. So the council is aware we're acting in this capacity as much of a drafter and said we don't have confidences between the parties here. We're not, if the party has any real legal questions that they're concerned about, I can try to address them. May want to seek independent counsel, but this is a way we've done this in the past with the Odell Station to try to be efficient for both parties when there's already coming forward to the mutuality of interest. So, that.
One other suggestion we could, on the very last whereas, perhaps we could change that date from November 27 to November 26 for the public hearing.
Done.
And just point of order, that was pointed out by the fire chief. So he's on the ball.
One thing I'd underscore, too, that Chief Haslip mentioned, and it's in your request for action. The need for this, from the district's perspective, and it's again important for the true fair value discussion, is they are able to go, and it's a great benefit to the city, they are able to have more efficiency in accessing capital funds for their repairs if they own title to the property, so they can have an easier time accessing the bond market or doing conventional financing if they own the property rather than as a lease interest with the city. So that component of the transaction is a benefit to the city and its citizens because the district has better access to capital and less expensive funds. If they don't
the other thing, too, and it's probably not a big deal, but in terms of risk and liability, particularly with the nature of the work that firefighters and emergency medical response people do, if we own or lease the building to them as owners, it's very likely that there were any kind of litigation that were to arise from something to do with the building that we would be sued along with the fire district because of our ownership. So I think what we're proposing to do certainly limits our liability. Exposure to, you know, a tree falling down, something's car, and
Gary's exactly right, and that was part of the discussions the city had in that its liability is managed. The district would have a liability anyway as owner or lessee for its operational capacity. So the district's position, if you will, and risk wasn't materially changed, but the city's had the benefit of being taken out of the question of liability because it was not on title.
Just a point of information, somebody might be thinking, well, what about the Odell station, our new station that was constructed on Odell, that is occupied by the fire district? That was an interesting project in that we actually have joint occupancy. The fire district bought the property and made it available for the city to build a new fire station. We did that with a bond issue. Our citizens are paying for that fire station currently. Fire district owns the land. If there were, and we lease the use of the fire station to them. If for any reason we pull out of the fire district, or they pull out fire service to blame for whatever reason that might be, then the property would, or our station, we would own our station, and we would have to purchase the property from the fire district at some fair market value. So it's a little different deal that we have on that station, primarily because the citizens of Blaine, having incurred a debt, that we're still paying for, and that when that debt is retired, we'll probably come to you. Well, we won't, because I won't be around, but someone will come to you and probably suggest the same thing for that station as we are for the city on.
You're not suggesting you're stepping on a nice plane in the future.
With his trout rod.
With his trout rod, he'll be around.
I won't be around here.
Any questions from the council?
Okay, I think we'll hold the questions from the council until we have to have the public hearing.
Okay. Persons speaking on this issue will be allowed 3 minutes. An additional 2 minutes of non-repetitive testimony will be allowed after all testimonies have been heard. Action may be taken at the end of the public hearing. If anyone wants to say anything, please step forward and state your name and address. And are there any questions from the council?
I hope this is in order. Early on, we heard a comment from you, Mike, stressing your concerns, and now we've heard some details from our attorney. Are your concerns adequately addressed by his comments?
I'm speaking for myself as an individual, not on behalf of any group which I may also be a member of. As far as I'm concerned, the transaction seems to be rather straightforward, provided the appropriate caveats are put on the title so that they revert back to the city of Blaine or to the residents of Semiahmoo if you cease using the fire hall. This transaction is a little different than the other transaction in that there was basically no cost to the city of Blaine for this particular fire station. It was built for by the Trillium Corporation, as I mentioned earlier, and the additional little piece of icing on the cake was the Semiahmoo's Ladies Club created the opportunity to hold umpteen fundraisers and contribute one of the fire engines to the City of Blaine Fire Department. So we have a vested interest in making sure that this continues to operate as a fire hall, and that's my only point of view here.
Thank you.
My question was basically the same thing. I just want to make sure that the SRA was okay with this, because it's not a bad deal. I don't think it's a bad deal. I just want to make sure that you felt that the SRA was okay with it.
As the secretary of the SRA, I will be reporting back the results of this meeting and giving them a copy of the documentation that you provided. And provided you follow through with that documentation, I will recommend that we be reasonably satisfied with it.
Thank you.
I can help respond to part of the question. I think the one clarification I may need to make if the case was any confusion, the reversion would be to the city of Blaine. It would not be to any other entity. So it would not revert to the Semiahmoo Community Association at all. The reversionary interest would be the city. If it was any way otherwise, we would have to go out through surplus and appraisal and treat it differently. Because it's an intergovernmental transfer, we're able to approach this for a true fair value reflecting that reversionary interest to protect the city, maintain the active station, and come back to the city, and that would be benefiting the city and the residents. So just for that clarification.
Are there?
I just had a couple. What do we estimate the amount of repairs? Extensive or are they?
We've already replaced all the carpet in the station. We've made substantial repairs to the fire sprinkler system, which has flooded out downstairs twice. That won't happen again. We just took down the rotten cedar tree. So we've been making these repairs all along. So this is going to simplify us being able to maintain the station. We're still struggling with getting volunteers out there, always have in the 20 years that we've owned that station. We do have a resident program, student resident program out there, which might mean some remodeling of some of the bedrooms, and so I can't give you an accurate total cost. We have done some energy audits on all of our other stations, but not been able to do it on Semiahmoo Station because we don't own it. So this is going to make everything a little simpler and streamlined. And, I can give you a report, though, on my monthly report as we make expenses, and then you can keep track of the money that we're spending on it. Okay.
Are there any other questions of the council? I declare the public hearing closed. And now moving on to the consent agenda. Items listed. The items listed below will be enacted by one motion. And if separate discussion is desired on an item, that item may be removed from the consent agenda and placed on the regular agenda at the request of a council member. Can I get a motion for the approval?
Oh. Second.
For the approval of payables in the amount of $752,626.26. For the approval of payroll in the amount of $0. For the approval of the November 13th, 2012 City Council minutes. For the approval of the completed PW yard improvement project. And for the approval of the completed 435th Martin Street remodel project and or the new City Hall. Are there any other questions or comments? Can I get a motion to approve the... Oh, sorry. I call for a vote.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Okay, moving on to the next item on the agenda, council action items. as far as resolution 161512 on the authorizing sale of property at the San Miguel Fire Station.
I move that we approve resolution 1615-12.
Second. Just confirm that's as modified as I described.
What'd you say, John?
That's as modified as I described.
Okay.
I'm sorry, what's second?
Any questions or comments?
Is this the last time that the council will see it, or will we see the actual wording? I'm concerned about the reversion component.
Yeah, by requirement of law, this action you would not be required to bring back the final agreement and the final wording. You were delegating that authority to the city manager to negotiate the final agreement and closing. If you'd like it, we certainly can update you and share that with you, and if you prefer. You want to do it formally, we can add that to the resolution. You want to deal with it informally, we can just tell you we'll bring it back to before we finalize it.
I'm comfortable doing it informally. I don't know about my brothers and sisters.
As a lawyer, trust me.
Well, if the council shares false concern and you want it to come back to you to review that agenda, I'm happy. Years, and so 2 weeks doesn't really matter, but if that's what you would like.
No, can we include that in the motion? Can we read that? We'll include that revision, William?
Well, it's already
in.
You already
done
it.
Well, that's what we're going to finally come back to Gary with. We work out a few of the details to work out, and I just need to talk to Gary and the fire chief about title insurance, or whether the district's going to acquire title insurance as part of the transaction. It's going to be a quit claim or, you know, warranty deed. We're just those final nuances Gary and the fire chief and I are going to discuss and resolve in the final agreement. That final agreement would define the active station and the language of the covenant and define the terms of the reversionary interest. Now, if you want to see that prior to that execution, that's fine.
Yeah, I was not asking to see it. I was more just curious as to the process. Let's leave it there.
We're paid trust these people, so I'm happy to put John and Gary from up here. If you see anything concerning, you need to have to come back and see my
council. We'll forward it to you before any of these executed.
So. Are
there any other questions?
Second.
All in favor?
Seconded by
Paul. Okay, because the original motion was by Dennis and seconded by Charles.
Okay.
All right,
okay.
Then.
I was
wrong. Call question.
Don't do that.
I call for the question. All in favor? All opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Okay, moving on to the next item on the agenda is a presentation by the students that will be made by Shrin and myself. And it is... Okay, hi, so as you all know, I'm Tyler and this is Sharon, and we are two representatives of the Youth in Government Day students that have come here today to learn about Blaine City Hall and everything about it and how the government of Blaine works. And we're here to give a presentation on what we went over as SWOT, or the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats within the city of Blaine that we see as youth in Blaine.
All right, so first off, I just want to apologize for a typo in the first line. I just want to apologize for a typo in the first line. It should say sense of community. And we believe that Blaine is a really tight-knit community and has a good vibe, and a lot of the citizens watch out for each other. And next, we think that it's a fairly safe community, and there's a low crime rate. We also think that the public safety in Blaine is very efficient, and the police department and the fire department is like highly trained, and they're very good at their jobs. Living close to the border, we believe that there's added protection, and we very much enjoy that. We also believe that Blaine is very environmentally friendly. Today we toured the... today we toured the state-of-the-art waste management site.
Okay, so continuing on, we feel that there's a lot of diversity in Blaine with the border being right next door to us. There's lots of Canadian centering. There's lots of different types of religions and races, or people of different ethnicity coming through Blaine. And also with our proximity to Canada, it helps stimulate business as Canadians are continually moving in. We feel that's a strong suit because Canadians come into Blaine because prices are lower, and helps stimulate our economy. Also, we feel that the proximity to Peace Arch Park and the San Juan Islands offers a lot of beauty to incoming tourists, and it's really nice to have this so close, like, because we're right in the middle of everything. So as tourists come into Blaine from Canada or from the south, we have this to offer, and we feel that it's pretty cool to have in our community. As far as some weaknesses goes, we don't. The train system in Blaine is something that the students aren't quite happy with. Nothing we can really control, but like just the slowness of the trains and how slow they move can cause lineups far into Birch Bay. And as students move in, are coming into Blaine for like school and different events at the school, sometimes the lineups can be really long and cause us to be late for different events and whatnot. As far as business growth goes, there's lots of empty buildings in Blaine, and we feel that like they could be filled with business, like especially downtown. Like there's tons of empty buildings that we just wonder why aren't filled with business. We also feel that in Blaine there isn't there's a lack of community opportunities for the youth, like especially in downtown. Like for kids my age and kids like as teenagers, there aren't just really many things that teenagers can do in Blaine. We feel that like maybe we could, as a community, start building some stuff for students, teenagers, and whatnot, because it'd be pretty cool for us. Another thing that we had mentioned was the underutilization of the marina, because like we have a really nice marina and it's really beautiful, like out, it's coming out from Semiahmoo, coming out from the Blaine docks. It's like there's lots of boats out there, but like we feel that we could maybe incorporate the marina more, like by building restaurants and building attractive places. I mean, we have the park, which is really nice, and the docks, which are cool to like jump off in the summertime and to look out to the bay, but maybe incorporating more business out there to attract tourists, maybe from Canada, would be pretty cool. And also, a weakness that we see is our anti-Canadian sentiment. Like, whenever Canadians are coming into Blaine, we're always just like, oh, the Canadians again. Just go to Bellingham already. It's like border lineups. Shh, just come on. But I don't know how we'd improve on that, but if we could, that'd be cool. again, like I just said, with the border traffic, border lineups are really long because people are always coming in through and out Blaine. To go down to Bellingham and south for better prices. But again, that's not really something we can control. As far as the Bell Road portal way traffic, the 274 on-off ramp, it had been discussed about how it's only one way onto the freeway and one way off, and it for maybe possible future development of the city, we could possibly make a two-way on-off ramp, but I'm not sure how the prices and economy, or sorry, that made no sense. But the prices of that would fit in, so I don't know if that's like a long-term idea or what, but that'd be pretty cool. We feel that we're not as good at drawing tourism as we could be. Like, we're pretty small, like, we're a small town, but like, we don't really like take advantage of that, and we don't like try and like use everything we have to make to like draw tourists in. Like, we have restaurants in Blaine which are nice, but like maybe to like beef it up and really make Blaine a place where people want to come would be nice. And also we discussed that there are a lack of family wage jobs in Blaine, as in like there are plenty of opportunity for jobs to be given out to people in Blaine, but as far as like family wage jobs where a man or woman can have a job in Blaine that they can use to support their family and use to continue to be sustainable isn't quite available as readily as we feel that it could be. Next slide. Okay. As far as opportunities go, with the closure of the Amtrak station a few years back, we feel that like maybe we could bring it back because it would help with the train and like travel, and I don't know why it was closed. I'm not educated on that, but maybe bringing that back could help stimulate at least like transportation, as like maybe Canadians would use the train to go to Bellingham or further south, and they wouldn't be clogging the train tracks, or I don't know why I said train tracks, sorry, the border and the freeway. I don't know if that would help. Like I was talking about, our small town, like enhance our small town atmosphere, just like really enforce that, like we're a small town and that we want people to visit this place because it's really awesome and beautiful. And like I said earlier, do more with the marina, such as with the restaurants being developed and boating. And then maybe more community events, like down at the G Street and H Street plazas, like we have it available to us. I don't know why we don't really utilize them as much as we do. Like, we have like gardeners markets on Saturdays, and throughout the summer we'd have some events such as the Blaine Jazz Festival that take place there, but like throughout the rest of the year, like it seems underutilized, and like we could have like community events that could be taking place there, such as like maybe live bands, like high school bands, I don't know, anything, but they're there for a reason. I think we could utilize them more for like different types of activities for family, youth, and nightlife. Also, like, we do like things like Hands Across the Border, but with Canada. But also, we feel that we could maybe do more events in cooperation with them, like become more friendly with our neighbors in Canada, and it might help decrease their anti-Canadian sentiment that I talked about earlier. We'd also thought about like catching Canadian shopping by maybe like incorporating new larger businesses in Blaine, so that like Canadians, instead of going south for Seattle and Bellingham, they could just come to Blaine instead and buy our business, but buy goods from our business. We could also use, we also talked about using the old airport strip for a new mall, which there's a lot of space there, and there's been talk about, I've heard Rite Aid building a new store on the old airport landing strip or moving in, but like maybe taking that place since it's not being used anymore except as a truck stop, and maybe building it into a mall. I know that would be expensive to run, but like the revenue that could bring in could make up for the cost. And also, like, a thing that I've noticed is that, like, in Bellingham, there's a lot of, like, street art and, like, murals that are, like, throughout the town. And, like, in downtown Blaine, there's, like, plenty of places where there's, like, brick buildings that, like, artists could, like paint on and, like, create murals, which could be attractive. And it's, like, I mean, I don't want to say, like, but it's just, like, if there's, like, tons of brick walls that are just kind of boring brick walls, why couldn't you, like, take advantage of it and, like, maybe have some, like street artists like come in and just paint them and like make it look pretty and beautiful and really cool stuff like that. Because I don't know, maybe just make Blaine more attractive and more appealing to tourists. And then also we had talked about possible artist galleries coming around more, because like there used to be with the Loomis Hall, there used to be tons of art galleries that would be held there all the time, but not as frequent as they are anymore. And then possible big threats to Blaine and the future that we see or that we potentially see could be big businesses moving in that we've talked, though I just talked about building a mall. Like with big businesses moving in, it destroys small business, and that's not what we want. We want to keep the small business while continuing to thrive with everything else. Also with absentee home ownership, as far as, like, as I was saying earlier about, like, the empty buildings, there are people that, like, own buildings, but they're not consistently there running them, and that could be a potential problem. As far as the age of buildings, like, they could deteriorate because, like, a lot of the buildings in at least downtown Blaine are getting old, and they're starting to get run down, and restoration could come into place, or might need to come into place in the near future, which could cost money. We also talked about with the closing of Semiyama, it will affect the revenue and like what you guys had been talking about the budget earlier. It's going to cut jobs, it's going to cut lots of funding to different schools, and it's going to be a big threat for at least the next few months until unless the Semiyama thing gets worked out and someone else buys it and reopens it. Also, we had talked about with BP closing that could also help in some way, shape, or form affect how I can't really know how to, I don't know how to put it, but like it could affect our community and whatnot. And then as the value of the Canadian dollar drops, it continues to affect small business in Blaine. And we also talked about the economy limiting opportunities of community sustainability, as it's going to be harder to sustain the small business long term with the economic suffering that we've been coming down with for the past few years now. Also, with the West Coast Fault Line, there could be possible earthquakes. With a ton of 7.0 earthquakes having come off the coast in the past few weeks, these natural disasters could affect public safety, and we might not have the resources to continue sustaining ourselves if like a large natural disaster were to come. Limited public safety could come with the cut of, I think it was 2 police officers. Like it could limit public safety, and it's definitely going to affect how the city runs. With the train crossing continuing to be slow, it's also going to continue to slow movement into Blaine, and which is just annoying. But I don't know. Also, being close to the border, we're always like cautious of terrorism and attacks of terrorism, because we just don't know who's going to pass through the border and who's going to, or like have something on a train, or like we don't know what's who's passing through. So we always have to keep that in mind of such as dangerous people crossing the border, because we just, you never know. And as far as that goes, that pretty much wraps up our presentation on strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats of Blaine that we see as youth in government. And I'd like to give a special thanks to the City Council, Mayor Robinson, Mr. Tomsic, Mr. Haslip, Mrs. Sanchez, Mrs. Whitewolf, Mr. Lazenby, Mr. Jones, the school board, Mr. Ellis, Mr. Nix, and Mr. Liebert, for all the time you've put in today and helping us learn about Blaine City government and how it runs and operates in day-to-day life. Thank you. Are there any unfinished business from the councilman or woman? Is there any new business that the council would like to present? Any more?
I just had a new business. I would first of all like to express our appreciation as a council, Mr. Liebert, for organizing this. He's done this for a very long time. He does a wonderful job in making sure that we add this to our agenda every year and we have the opportunity to have students participate. I'd like to thank all of the students that have been here today. I'm always amazed about how bright you guys are. It always amazes me that we in a very good way.
They're always amazed at how bright they are.
Are you sure that's not true? I was going to say that. They're probably amazed how unbright we are. Also, you're very mature. You spend a lot of time on issues. You come up with very good thought process. And I'm amazed how many of the items that you consider as either strengths or weaknesses are items that we've discussed many times in the past. So, quite amazing. I know you're all going to have great futures. I do hope that you'll take an interest in politics because I think it's very important for this country to have people that are informed and are concerned about the direction that the government is taking, both at the local level, state level, and at the federal level. And I hope that one day you'll occupy these seats official basis, but not in Blaine and in the city that you live in. I'm sure the country will benefit from that. I think your school deserves a great applause for the work that they've done with you. Certainly your teachers have done an outstanding job, and we appreciate having you. So on that, I think we can close the meeting.
And I'd now like to close the meeting. Meeting adjourned.